Ladies and gentlemen, it's Tuesday. Football Scoop Podcast is back. I'm back. I wasn't even here Sunday. Zach, JB, appreciate you guys carrying the load. Y'all are awesome. Let's do this. We're a couple weeks into the season. Let's talk FBS. Let's talk power conferences at first, everybody else thereafter. We're 2 weeks in. What do we feel like we really know about this season, these teams? And what have we not really seen enough yet to really form an opinion? Alphabetically, ACC, why don't we start there? I'll open the floor. What do we know? We know Bill Belichick is a petty man. Can't have the Patriots come scout. Fuck out of here, Dad. Sorry. All right, Zach, give me something. ACC, what do you feel like you know?
I think we know that Stanford is going to be the worst team in this conference. That was proven, I think, in the first quarter of week zero. That program's just in a pitiful spot due to documented reasons. And we know Florida State's a really good team. I don't know that they're going to win this conference. I don't know that they're going to make the playoff as an at-large, yada, yada, yada. But this is a really good football team. They're going to be I know they're going to be undefeated going to when they host Miami on October 4th. Their schedule coming up is Kent State at Virginia, a road Friday night game, always tricky. But then they get Miami at home on October 4th. So we're going to learn a lot on that night.
Okay. JB, anything you feel like you know in this conference?
Yeah, I know that despite having a guy touted as maybe the top quarterback draft prospect and having NFL players at wide receiver and other spots, Clemson has real offensive issues. And they just finished off a stretch of going, I want to say, 64 and a half minutes plus at home without a touchdown. And they were held scoreless the entire second half of that home game against LSU. Hey, Blake Baker's got a good defense. He does a great job. But you're at home. You can't score a single point. And then you fall behind 16-0 to the Fighting Jared Parkers of Troy, and you get a measly field goal just before half to trail 16-3 at home in a game that had weather delays and all this other stuff. They finished with just 27 points in that game. So, yeah, I think that Clemson has real – offensive issues, and I think that probably right now I would put Florida State and Miami at the top of that conference. Having seen Miami in person, I think their physicality is real on both lines of scrimmage. And I agree, like Bill Belichick, Stanford, we might feel like we know for sure Stanford's the worst team in the ACC, but I'm not sure how far below it is from Bill Belichick's UNC squad.
That might be pushing it, but maybe not. We'll see. Doug, tell me something you feel like you know about the ACC.
The ACC for at least 10 years seems like it's been a league with one team, one clear team at the top, and then kind of everyone else, like one national title contender, and then everyone else. And through the first 2 weeks of the season, I think that is played out pretty clearly that Florida State is that team at the top. And then there's, you know, Miami's in that conversation, but then there's everyone else. So it seems par for the course going into this year that the ACC is, you know, you've got your one top team that can compete for a national title and everyone else. To talk about Clemson for a second, that's the biggest head scratcher of the past 3 or 4 years. I thought Garrett Riley was the home run offensive coordinator that Dabo could have hired at the perfect time. Pair him with a quarterback that returns the past 2 years that should absolutely light the offensive record books on fire, and they continue to struggle, and it just doesn't that just continues to not make any sense to me. I thought that was a can't miss hire that just has not materialized in the way that I think nearly everyone expected it to.
You know, when I think about this conference, I think there's some very, very good football coaches. There's some guys, really good football coaches, Justin Wilcox, Jeff Brohm, you know, are the ones that are in my head at the very moment. Fran Brown. These are guys that I wonder if in a place where they could recruit better, where they had better access to some players, how good they could be. It's just a thought that comes to mind. Is there concern here in this conference for where is this season going? I mean, Stanford is – the season's written off. Don't even talk about them. Pitt, Virginia Tech, North Carolina. Wake is a – you know, I don't really have any expectations at Wake. They're going to try and sneak out a couple of fun wins. What else?
Yeah, I mean, I think
Wake – in the words of Kent Dillingham, we'll get to him soon, I'm sure. Somebody has to go 6-6. Somebody has to go 3-9. You mentioned a lot of those teams that are going to do that. Clemson's been a disappointment thus far, but I think that's counterbalanced a little bit by Florida State's looked better than expected. Miami's looked better than expected. Georgia Tech, haven't heard a whole lot from them so far, but they did win on the road at Colorado. We'll learn a lot very, very soon about that team. But I think – in a day and age where people judge your top more than they judge the middle or the bottom, I think this has been a strong start for the ACC, all things considered.
Well, I would counterpoint SMU with a really disappointing loss, considering what their control factor was in that game, and they controlled that game almost beginning to end, and that's a Baylor team that had opened at home with a loss against an Auburn team that has almost as many play callers as it had wins last season. And so I think that Scott, you made me lose my train of thought because I saw you smirking on camera. I was trying to be so deadpan. But I think the ACC is rapidly approaching. Georgia Tech's a good team. I think Georgia Tech's a real quality team, and they have Clemson coming up this weekend. And if at home, and if they can get that game, then their schedule is kind of conducive for the Jackets to maybe make some noise all season long. But I don't think the ACC is too far away from having to hope that Florida State and Miami can carry the banner all year, or they're going to be sweating out Selection Sunday again, wondering if they get SMU and Clemson in, or this year's version of those two teams.
To talk about Georgia Tech for just a second, they've got Clemson this weekend, but then they don't play another currently ranked team until Georgia in the season finale. Like that, their schedule sets up pretty nice if they could find a way to get a win this weekend.
Good stuff. Zach, I agree with you. In this day and age, it feels like your conference is evaluated by who's thriving at the top. And there's always going to, like Kenny Dillingham says, there's going to be a 6-6. Somebody's got to finish, 3-9. But you want to see some strength at the top.
So speaking to Doug's point, let's just say Georgia Tech loses to Clemson, loses to Georgia, sweeps everyone else. Looking forward to December, a 10-2 Georgia Tech that could very well be a very good football team, but without major skins on the wall, competing for a bid against a 9-3 Oklahoma team that currently, as of this moment, has 9 AP top 25 opponents on its schedule. I think we know where everyone's allegiances would lie, but that's the type of debate we could possibly be having.
No, you're right. Like, you're exactly right. So,
all right, Big 12. What do we know in this conference? That's a bold statement.
Arizona State's not going to repeat as champions. There are worse things in the world than losing on the road at night at Starkville. A certain team might do that later on this season. But this team Kenny Dillingham has told us from the beginning, this team just doesn't have the character that you need to repeat. Winning a conference is extremely difficult. Winning it two times in a row is more than twice as difficult. This Arizona State team is just not built of that fiber. They're not going to do it.
I think that we know the Big 12 conference is really touting its quarterback play and the depth of their quarterbacks across the league. I think Brett Yormark, maybe Scott, you and I discussed this yesterday, he's probably done the best job, in my opinion, of any of the power conference commissioners in the last few years, because that was the Big 12, I feel like, was closer to becoming what the Pac-12 now is than any of the leagues. And yet the Pac-12 is the one that disintegrated, and your Mark is the one who kept the Big 12 together. And then thirdly, I would say, I think we know Utah is probably the best team in the Big 12. And I know BYU has looked solid and played great defense, and Iowa State has two very quality wins. But when Kyle Whittingham comes out and says he's got two NFL tackles on his offensive line, and a guy that's coached and done it as well as he has for so long, I think they're the most physical team, and that physicality will translate over the balance of the season in that league.
You got to stay healthy, but I hear what you're saying. I almost said Brock Purdy, but Rocco Beck he's gritty, man. I like a gritty seasoned quarterback, so I ain't betting against Iowa State just yet.
No, I mean, a team that's got 2 3-point wins so far this season against your two biggest rivals in a conference where most games are close, and you have that dude behind center that can go out and make you a play when you need one, is incredibly valuable.
Do you guys see any team other than Utah? I mean, Texas Tech has to be in the conversation as a contender with the investments they've made in their roster and staff. They've got Oregon State this weekend and then a big matchup at Utah next weekend. Sure. That's going to be a big one, but that may be for the de facto conference title, because beyond that, Texas Tech does not play another ranked opponent for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think good point. Really good point, Doug. Texas Tech, you know, with the most expensive roster in college football history, better be there at the end of the year, or I think that spells a lot of trouble for people. But I think I would have the top four in the Big 12 right now as, not necessarily in this order, Utah, I've already said, I think is best, but the top four, in my opinion, Utah, Iowa State, BYU, and Texas Tech, and then we'll go from there. Arizona has put up a bunch of points in a couple of early games. We'll see if that can translate over the balance of the season. But I think those four are the conference's best bets. And much like the ACC, they better hope that like they're truly elite and that they don't cannibalize one another if the Big 12 wants to be more than a one-bid league.
Speaking of that, John, BYU schedule, they've given up 3 points so far. It's Portland State and Stanford, but that 3 points is 3 points better than possibly you could do. But later on this season, they get Utah, Iowa State, and Texas Tech in succession, those last two on the road. So you talk about cannibalizing each other. That seems like the team one most likely that could win this conference to be cannibalized by its own schedule.
You can't, guys. Portland State and Stanford, that's – you can't even. We know sure. Nothing about BYU, zero.
Those stats don't.
Is this Mike Gundy's last year at Oklahoma State?
I mean, you got huge questions like that. That's a – there's a lot of discussion about that one.
I don't see that. Yeah.
And if it opens, how attractive is a job is it at this point?
I think it's an attractive job. I think Mike has gotten – stale there.
Yeah.
I mean, the argument is Mike Gundy is the only one that's ever really won over a sustained amount of time at Oklahoma State, which is of course true, but that doesn't mean he's the only one that can win. Every single one of your neighbors, Kansas State, TCU, Tech, Baylor, SMU, they're all winning.
JB just summarily dismissed TCU. Didn't even mention them. No. BYU up there beat Portland State and, you know, whatever. I know.
When you have a bear at quarterback, you get some bonus equity.
Kansas, I thought, was going to beat Missouri. They did not. Kansas's offense is really fun to watch, to be honest. They couldn't stop Missouri at the end there. That was a battle. That's a fun game. Kansas is a good program too. Kansas will beat people. Mm-hmm. All right. What don't we know in the Big 12? What are we yet to learn?
I think Baylor has an offense that could go win the Big 12. I don't know about its defense. Give it 38 to Auburn, 45 to SMU, and a comeback win. That's more difficult. Baylor's defense has faced more difficult challenge than BYU's. We could say that. The offense is Big 12 championship quality. Defense could hold them back.
Yeah, we're this deep into Big 12 discussion, and we haven't mentioned Coach Prime and the Buffaloes. But I don't think they're a very good team at all. And I think we're going to continue to see that bear itself out. West Virginia, you know, we knew Rich Rod was taking over a rebuilding project, but maybe there's a lot more reconstruction there than we might have initially thought. And then Cincinnati, I still think that situation goes south before it points north.
Let me ask you guys the question collectively. If Colorado's team is not very good, and if they just have a season, you know, 3 wins, 4 wins, and if that were to happen again, at some point, does Prime lose interest?
I'd say so, yeah.
I think he's got the perspective now that, like, he has his health. He's got to count those blessings. And, you know, he did a really nice job a year or two and got two players' numbers retired controversially. But I just think he has a different perspective than when he first arrived at Colorado.
Yeah, I wouldn't say loses interest. I would say maybe he the dude hates losing. Whatever you think about Prime, he is a competitor. And so I think with all of that, if he feels like, you know, they not only struggle this year, but if he doesn't feel like the roster has the building blocks that they believed it was going to have by getting Julian Lewis and all of that, then, you know, he takes a long, hard look at it, especially with the health stuff.
You're absolutely right, John. I shouldn't have said loses interest. Makes a life decision and says, hey, this is not what I need to be doing for my life right now. Yeah. All right, let's shift to the Big Ten, if you don't mind. Zach, what do you know in the Big Ten?
Penn State's still the same team it's always been. They're the third best team in that conference. There are worse things to be in the world, but they're not the number two team in the country. They're not the number two team in the Big Ten. They play Oregon at home in a few weeks. I know that's the whiteout game. Oregon's going to go in there, beat them. They go to Columbus. They're going to lose that game. And they're going to make the playoff at 10-2 and be overranked. I know that, like, I know my own hand. Against FIU this past weekend, they didn't score their second touchdown until the more than 40 minutes into the game. 40 minutes, two touchdowns. FIU. I do the sign language FIU, but I don't know it.
I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
Yeah, I think – we see that the Big Ten has three of the top four teams as presently ranked in the AP top 25. I don't think we know a whole lot about any of them other than Ohio State's still got a really good defense that can carry along an offense that's going to continue to grow under Julian Sayin. But I think we don't know that much about Oregon yet. And I think that with Penn State getting that game at home, they're so talented on defense that, you know, Drew Aller is not him, but he's still a really good college quarterback. And I think
here's the thing about Oregon, other than the Rose Bowl last year, they play to eat your soul. I don't know of a team. Name me a team in college football that plays harder week in, week out.
No, I've consistently said on this pod and beyond that, like, Oregon is an SEC team buried on the West Coast. But they are absolutely an SEC team. Like, even more so than they are a Big Ten team, they're an SEC team because they're physical and they're really freaking fast. But Penn State's defense, especially up front, is really nasty. And Penn State, I think, has an offensive line that will be able to control the line of scrimmage against Oregon. And I think that conference is a little bit – it's really good, but I don't know that it's got a singular super team. But I also don't think there's at all a super team anywhere in college football this year. I would contend this year is more open than just about any in a really long time all across college football. Doug, I see you maybe nodding your head, or maybe you're like, JB is an idiot. I don't know. Maybe. What are you thinking there, Doug?
No, I agree. I do think it's pretty wide open, but I disagree that the verdict is out on has not been determined on Oregon. I think they have looked super impressive through 2 weeks. The way that they weaponize words and shade against them is very, very akin to, you know, the Dan Lanning learning it under Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, and finding a way for that to motivate his guys beyond belief to go out there and absolutely beat the brakes off Oklahoma State. And people in Eugene knew it as soon as Mike Gundy made those comments, like, oh, this team's about to get buried. Like they know it. Like it's become part of the Oregon Ducks culture. And that makes them an SEC-like program in Big Ten country right there. I think they're super impressive. Dante Moore, there's a lot of chatter at the beginning of the season. He's a Michigan kid, played at UCLA for Chip Kelly for a year before landing at Oregon and waiting for his opportunity. But he's completing over 77% of his passes. He's been crisp. The chatter before the season started was he may be the best Oregon quarterback of all time by the time it's all said and done. And you put a talent like that behind an offensive line that's going to mow people and Will Stein, that's perhaps the best play caller in college football right now. And that's going to be a nasty recipe for Northwestern and Oregon State coming up, and then a huge matchup with Penn State.
Yeah, the good point on the Oak State game and the way that Mike Gundy needlessly and foolishly gave Dan Lanning way more bulletin board material than ever needed. That was this year's version of they play for clicks and we play for wins. And we play for the brotherhood and for each other. And my goodness, that will be a defining speech from Dan Lanning's entire time, was just the evisceration that he predestined against Colorado last year. And he's as good a motivator as there is in college football right now. And you're right. They made Oklahoma State look like Stanford, and that's the worst thing you can do to a power conference team right now.
Couple of things. I'm with Zach. Until Penn State proves me wrong, I believe Penn State is who Penn State is. And they're, you know, a nice program that's going to win 10 games a year. They're not going to win at all. They never get good quarterback play. They get acceptable quarterback play. Their quarterbacks don't win them games. And maybe that's what
the one quarterback that they had win them games was Trace McSorley, who is not an NFL prospect whatsoever. Listed at 6 foot or something like that, probably 5'10 and 3/4. But he was a great college quarterback that won them games. Since then, they replaced him with Christian Hackenberg, who's 6'5" from a big East Coast school, could throw the ball across the Atlantic, but was just a stiff. And Drew Aller is Christian Hackenberg's little brother. And Bo Perbula has a lot more Trace McSorley traits to him than Drew Aller does.
Also, Trace McSorley was handing the ball off to a young man named Saquon Barkley. So that helps your quarterback play tremendously.
It does. I guess it does. That is a good point, Doug.
I would point out Penn State won, 13 games last year, made it to the semifinals. So that's solid. That's not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no one's trying to say that they're a bad team or anything.
I'm not saying they're a bad team, but I'm saying I don't think the SEC is like, man, hope I don't get a Penn State draw. Like,
I bet they do say that about Oregon. And
yes,
I think in some ways Ohio State. So that's the gap that they've got to close.
Yeah, I think, well, that's absolutely fair, because, you know, if you score 20 points against Penn State, you're going to have a chance. But I don't know how many people this year are going to score 20 or more against the Nits.
All right. Again, I'd love to be proven wrong. I'd love Penn State to come out and be dominant in some big game. I'm just waiting for it to happen. Ohio State, on the other hand, what I saw against Texas, that's a complete football team. Didn't play their best game. Saiyan has a rocket arm, decisive, hitting dudes in hands where it should be hitting the hands. I was really super impressed by Ohio State.
Their defense. There's
some teams in here that are 2-0 that I'm not sure they're that all that good, but they're
Illinois
is a good football team. Yeah. Well coached football team.
The way they
play. Yeah, I was gonna say, we know what the Big Ten's upper class is. The middle class, Illinois, Indiana, Nebraska, Michigan, not Iowa, Washington maybe. I'd love to see USC have a really good season. This schedule is – they get at Illinois, at Notre Dame, at Nebraska, at Oregon. Those are really, really tough road trips. Those are good teams, and it's not easy to go from the West Coast to the Midwest. And then you also get Michigan at home in a game they should win. I'd love to see this USC team be as good as it can be and not just exist. Like, it seems like they've done – well, they've only been in Big Ten 1 year, but last year they just existed. I'd love to see them compete and be a factor.
Highest scoring team in college football right now, I think 66 points a game. Head to West Lafayette this weekend, and then Michigan State. I think those are two big wins. But then they've got at Illinois, home against Michigan, at Notre Dame. That's a that's the stretch. We're going to find out who this USC team is.
We'll know. Yeah, you're exactly right, Doug. Across a 14-day or stretch or so, three games. Can't remember if there's an open date sprinkled in there or not for the Trojans. I think their starters are, from talking to people out in the land of Troy, they feel really good about their starters. They don't think they have a whole lot of depth, and I don't think their offensive line has been even sniffed a test yet, and that's when we'll know. So Purdue doesn't have the horses, but Purdue will play physically against them because Purdue is going to reflect its head coach, Barry Odom. So I think, even though I don't think we'll learn a ton about USC this weekend, I think we'll see them get punched in the mouth for the first time. How they respond to me is going to be really, really telling for them. And then in terms of Illinois, and I asked Zach this question on Sunday, I think this has got a chance to be Brett Bielema's best team anywhere that he's been. And I know he took Wisconsin to a couple of Rose Bowls, but this team seems a little more complete offensively than what those teams were at Wisconsin. And I bet you right now, Lane Kiffin is sure wishing Luke Altmyer had not left the Grove.
Altmyer threw a pass in that game. They're on like the 15. He stepped up in the pocket. He is about to get absolutely destroyed. And he throws it off kilter, kind of off to the right. The guy catches it, goes out of bounds like the one. He got demolished and put it right where it needed to be. I was big boy impressed. And he just got up and played the next play.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 Illinois for real. All right. What don't we know? What do we still need to learn here? To me, there's a lot on the bone in the Big Ten. Nebraska, Wisconsin, USC, Washington.
I think we know that UCLA is a lot closer to Stanford than even sharing the same state.
Yeah, and you're not talking – I was going to say, if you're going to compare him to someone else, I was going to say he's not talking about geography there either. We're talking about on-field stuff.
Yeah, they're on
– go ahead.
I was just going to say they're on opposite ends of the state in California, but they're next-door neighbors in reality on the football field.
Washington gets Ohio State, Illinois, and Oregon at home. Like, Washington's not going to play in the Big Ten Championship, but Washington could decide who wins the Big Ten Championship.
Could. We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah.
We'll see. Not real convinced in that one. We'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. Coming right along. Let's talk the vaunted. Oh, well, yeah. Let's go SEC. Why not? What do we know here, gentlemen?
Oklahoma has a quarterback. Oklahoma has a functional offense. Therefore, Oklahoma has a chance. Defense is well-constructed. They're full of good players. But more than anything, they play really hard. And they clearly believe in their plan. They believe that Brent Venables is putting them – in the best position to succeed. So they have a quarterback who can put the team on his shoulders. Probably will need to do that more than he probably should. But this team has a real chance. I mean, they beat Michigan. I think the glow from that game is a little bit overrated. Michigan's probably a 9-3, 8-4 team playing a true freshman quarterback on the road. They weren't going to go win that game. Like, it wasn't that difficult to go win that game. But they won that game by 11 and could have easily won it by 21.
I feel like we know LSU's a competitive team.
Yeah. My question on Oklahoma, and I didn't get a chance to see the game. I was at a Michigan State game, but with the design runs for John Mateer, he's not a huge body dude. So to do that when you get to the meat of the SEC schedule is a little concerning. But he has
that ability to avoid the biggest hits. I don't know if that's a learned thing or you're just born with it, but he has the ability to put himself in harm's way and then take himself out of harm's play at a moment's notice.
It's going to be important in the SEC.
To be honest, when I look at the SEC, I feel like there's not a lot we really know just yet. Other than LSU's a competitive team. They gritted one out against Clemson. They had Louisiana Tech at home, you know, this past weekend and won the game. You know, when they get into the SEC, can they continue to grit them out? We'll see. But they're a feisty team. But there's actually about a lot of guys. Missouri, you know, that was a hard-fought win against Kansas. South Carolina, you know, we'll see. Tennessee and Georgia about to play, so I feel like we'll see. Ole Miss kind of had to slog through Kentucky. You know, Ole Miss has Arkansas this upcoming weekend. Florida's going to give LSU – way more than LSU wants. A&M's at Notre Dame. We're about to learn, I think. I don't know that we know all that much here yet, personally.
I agree. I think I know the Texas offense is very much a work in progress. They don't have an identity yet. They don't know what they're good at yet. Offensive line, receiver, tight end is really good. Running back, quarterback is all trying to figure it out as they go along. So the mission for them is to not win the SEC, it's to get to 10-2 and be that team that nobody wants to play come December, January. You just need to keep improving and find your identity along the way. If I had to bet money on any team winning this conference right now, it'd be Georgia, simply largely from the fact that they get Alabama and Texas at home. The SEC championship game is obviously a virtual home game. They know how to go out there and win that one. I haven't paid attention to them much this season so far, but the people that I follow that know Georgia really well are like, this is a Georgia running game, this is a Georgia defense. If they're right, that'll carry them a long way. We'll, as you mentioned, Scott, we'll find out very soon because they got to take that on the road this week.
Here's the black mark on Georgia, though, is that they do not do a good job of stretching the field vertically. They rank in the like 104th or something and pass yards over 20 or 30 yards. And when you've played the early season schedule that they have and you're not creating explosive plays down the field, that's and you've established a good running game, that's a huge question mark for me. I wouldn't bet my money on Georgia to win this league.
I was going to say to Scott's comment that Florida will give LSU more than LSU wants this weekend. We think we know that. Maybe we don't know that. Not that Florida team we saw last weekend losing to South Florida. And LSU, I'm sure, won't forget the fact that Florida messed up its season late last year in the swamp. So Georgia, I think, is once again, very good on defense and has a nice ground game. They don't have much in the way of dynamics that we've seen thus far at the skill positions on offense. I think they're very much in game manager mode at the quarterback position. And, you know, you can be in game manager mode when you got 7 first-round draft picks on your defense like they were a few years ago winning back-to-back titles. I don't think they have that right now. I'm talking with people that have seen them in person this year, including some coaches. They don't think it's the same personnel that Georgia has had in recent years. And I think that Tennessee is better I never thought I would say this, but I think Tennessee is better with Joey Swagular at quarterback than it was with Doug's favorite, Nico Iamaleava.
Good work. Good work.
I think this guy has an everyman appeal to him, and he's got a little hitch in his giddy up, so to speak. And I think guys relate to him, rally around him. I think Neyland Stadium Saturday night or Saturday is going to be crazy town, banana land. And they haven't beaten Georgia in 9 years since Juwan Jennings walk off Hail Mary.
I think that's an interesting point, John, just because you look at the quarterback position, and I'm a studier of the quarterback position, and look at so many teams who are completely, utterly transformed by bringing in quarterbacks. And everyone knows in these days, these guys don't come for free. Riley Leonard, Notre Dame doesn't get to where they got to without Riley Leonard. Ohio State doesn't win the national championship last year without Will Howard. Cam Ward, Miami, yoga this year. Tommy C at Florida State, John Mateer at Oklahoma. Transform those programs. But you bring in Joey Swagular and his everyman appeal. Obviously, Nico's NIL deal preceded him. Before he even got to Tennessee, he signed that thing. So it seems like he was a little bit – typecast is not the right word, but he was cast before he got there. That money preceded him and followed him around that he made it to Tennessee. I have no idea what Joey Swagular is making at Tennessee, but it's probably not much. So on the one hand – college football is changed in that you go out and pay to get a guy and he can change your program, change your locker room overnight. On the other hand, college football is still college football. And if you can be that dude that goes eats wings and drinks Miller Lights with your offensive line, that you can win a locker room over that well. So I don't have an overall point. I just think that's an interesting dichotomy.
I don't know what your definition of not much is, but the Swag is making bags, okay? Like the
dude, I was like, not much.
Heavy, heavy six figures, if not beyond. I know I was told he had gone to UCLA for like $150K or something. So he's making a hell of a lot more than that on Rocky Top. And I just want to add this about Georgia because this is from a college coach that has scouted them already this year. You can tell they lost a lot, and they're trying to make things simple to eliminate thinking. They look good in person, in which they should, but they will struggle if they don't establish a run game DNA on offense. They'll have to create some offense with trick plays. They like to play bully ball to out-physical you, but you can create some things against them. We've seen people create some things against them. You would think they would have scored more points after 2 weeks, but they haven't. And I think that tells something. Eye candy and inside zone will hurt them.
We'll see. We'll see. A lot to be learned to end this week three, which I'm excited about.
Yeah. Vanderbilt, South Carolina. Who would have ever thought we'd say that's a low-key, sneaky good game? Like, that's you got two of the best personalities in the sport anywhere at the respective quarterback positions for those two programs.
In the primetime slot too. That's good to see.
That's a nighttime one?
Yeah, 7:45 SEC Network.
Wow, SEC Network. Good. Interesting. Georgia, Tennessee is what time? It's nighttime as well.
2:30,
huh?
Yeah. I thought Georgia was 3:30, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Florida LSU is the ABC night game.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, right quickly, let's talk about Group 5. Anything we know? South Florida?
Yeah, I would say we know South Florida has the inside track to being the G5 playoff rep, but they're not alone. And they have the most equity in the bank right now. But I think it's South Florida. I think it's Tulane. I think it's James Madison. And I think it's Memphis with those. And Memphis gets South Florida at home. So that could be almost either Memphis's arrival point or South Florida's punctuation point. Because when you look at South Florida's schedule, they've got Memphis and Navy lurking down the road, in addition to obviously having Miami upcoming. But because the two wins that the Bulls already have under Alex Golish, I really feel like this Miami game is a complete house money game.
Agreed.
One team I'd throw in there is Texas State. They were done no favors this past weekend by Arizona State losing, so that's a little bit of shine taken off. But they beat a solid, solid UTSA team on the road this past weekend. Now they go to Arizona State in a game they can absolutely win. So those two wins don't measure up to South Florida. No one in the G5 can. But if the Bulls are to stumble down the stretch, that's a team that belongs in that conversation.
Doug, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to add, I think USF, with the equity they've built up with the wins the first 2 weeks, they would be allowed to stumble in the eyes of the committee this week if they keep it close and win out, and you're still repping the group of five in the playoff. And the other thing is, how has South Florida been left out of all the realignment stuff? Like, there, I feel like that's got to be a message from Alex Golish. Like, hey, you need to pay attention to us. We're in a major media market. We play good football. I mean, major media market. Right. But look at some of the other other teams that have been absorbed into group of five leagues. Like, South Florida is right there in that conversation. They can play good football. He's making a case for them right now.
South Florida was very good last year also, and they were about to beat Alabama, and then they kind of lost it at the goal line, and the game got away from them. Problem is, they play these big, big, big boys, and they get banged up. So if they can come through Miami healthy and then have a healthy rest of season, South Florida's going to be really, really good. But, man, it's a depth.
Yeah, I was just going to say, absolutely do not sleep on Memphis. I don't think we know enough about them yet. They won 10 games a year ago, and they get Arkansas at home coming up very soon, and they get that South Florida game at home. I think those are significant games that can shape the tenor of this season for Sam Pittman and the Hogs, and also shape the G5 playoff picture. And Silverfield and Memphis have done a nice job of making the Liberty Bowl not feel like the dumpster dive that it was the first several times I ever went to games there.
Because it was bad. You were not wrong.
It was real big bad.
So Tulane's got a couple chances to show out. They've got Duke, with their former quarterback coming back. So if they could beat him, then they go at Ole Miss. If you get that, all of a sudden Tulane's like way big up in the conversation as well. Schedule gets a little bit easier. They still have to go at Memphis and a couple other tough games like UTSA and Army. I mean, it's not easy. Right. But Tulane could continue to make some noise, some real big noise.
Yep.
Well, we're 43 minutes in, and I'm pretty excited about week three. Got to tell you guys, picks, no one's – I don't know. Zach, I don't know how I don't know how anybody's going to catch them already. Dudes – Zach, I'm impressed.
I've already got a spot on my mantle picked out for the trophy.
It's a good move.
I'm glad you don't put our pictures with the picks, or I would be wearing a brown paper bag this week, because my performance last week was flat out trash pad. Like, unacceptable behavior.
All right, gentlemen, let's go make this a great day. Everybody have a wonderful one. Football Scoop Podcast is out.